Before we start with the show, I want to read out this little email that I got. Hello, WIP12 team. I'm a long-time listener and fan of the show. Well, that's awesome. I want to reach out about a possible tournament shout-out for a US tournament coming up in a few months. If you could shout out the below, great. If not, no worries. I know you're all busy. Well, we're not that busy. We can do this. I can do this. Welcome to the Squabbling Goblins First Infinity Tournament. All you need is move, shoot, dodge. All are welcome to this beginner-focused tournament. We have a lot of new players in Boston and the surrounding areas, so we want to put on a tournament to show everyone how awesome the Infinity community is. Yeah, it's very awesome. If you are a new player, bring your minis and come on down. If you need to borrow some minis, let us know. If you are an experienced player, great, we'll see you here too. Who, you, me, and the friends you will make all the way. Sponsored by Tanner and Woody, please reach out to contact us at squabblinggoblin.com with any questions. What? A 3-round full 300-point 2-list Infinity N4 tournament focused on beginner-friendly missions. Price is 20 euro. Euro. They pay in dollars in America. Price is $20 per person with $5 off if you bring a table or train. Round 1 is superiority, starting at 10 till 12:30. Lunch, 12:30 to 1. Uplink center as round 2, from 1 to 3:30. Round 3, battleground from 3:30 till 6. Dinner nearby if you are interested. When? Sunday, May 19th, dice roll at 10 a.m., table available at 9:30. Where? Belmont's own The Squabbling Goblin, right outside of Boston, parking available, 39 Concord Avenue, Belmont, MA 02478. The store is garden level inside a small office building. Why? To play Infinity and have fun. Best of luck, Woody. Well, Woody, here you go. Hope a lot of people in the Boston area will look you up and start playing Infinity. And now, back to the show. Greetings, listeners. Welcome to the WIP12 podcast. My name is Raymond, and today I'm here with Dante from Melbourne. Hey, Dante.
Hey, Raymond. Good to meet you. Great to be here.
Yeah, yeah. You actually came up to us and said, I want to share my knowledge about military orders.
Yeah. I was very inspired by your Be Our Guest episode, and looking in your catalog, the military orders one seems to be made before the fire team changes.
Yeah,
I've found a lot of success with military orders, but they can be a hard faction to play, especially where they draw in new players.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, military orders is on the list like 100 episodes ago, and as you said, is before the link team changes. We now actually keep a list of any faction that was before those link team changes, so that we know, those episodes, they are really out of date.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's still some good advice in those old podcasts, kind of... Mm-hmm. Unit analysis, profile analysis, just getting your head around the game. So, you know, any MO players, you know, listen to this one, maybe go back and give that one a listen too.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's still lots of wisdom there.
Probably units that are good now, were good back then, Teutonic Knights, for instance.
Oh, some things never change.
Yeah. They still impetuous all the way and with 2 wounds and be awesome, so...
Oh, we're getting ahead of ourselves, right?
Yeah.
You gotta wait for your dessert.
Yeah, I know. So, yeah, Dante, so how did you get into the game?
Yeah, so I live in Melbourne, Australia. I was really into Malifaux Second Edition. I played that in my teenage years.
Mm-hmm.
Then, unfortunately, there was a kind of a rocky move to Third Edition with COVID happening at the same time, and the Melbourne community for Malifaux sort of evaporated.
Yeah.
So coming out of lockdown, looking around for new games, me and my dad play tabletop games every weekend together. So we were looking for something new. and there was a pretty sizable Infinity community playing. Mm-hmm. We were pretty hooked in by the sci-fi aesthetic and the breadth of influences on the look and feel of the game as well. And one thing we were looking for specifically was a game where you both felt like you were doing something all the time. Malifaux was a you go, I go sort of game, instead of like, activate your whole army. Now I activate my whole army.
Mm-hmm.
So but we really enjoyed the Infinity ARO system.
Yeah, just keeps you always in the game.
Yeah, it keeps you on your toes. Yeah. So and that was about 2 years ago, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, so Military Orders is your only army, or do you have more, or planning on doing more?
No, actually. So I got into the game with Operation Crimson Stone.
Mm-hmm.
That had just come out when I hopped in. So primarily I was playing Kriegador for my first year of play and set myself a challenge that I wouldn't go to another faction before I won a tournament with Kriegador. So I managed to win my tournament. And that's a funny story in its own right, but maybe I'll save that for the end or another time. And then I sort of looked around at kind of the other armies.
Yeah.
And Kriegador, it's a toolbox army.
Yeah.
You can build your army in a way where you can break down any engagement to a flowchart because of all the tools you have. So I was looking for something kind of to work on my fundamentals with. And, you know, I really liked the aesthetics of Military Orders. And, you know, I was kind of in a honeymoon phase, sort of building lists before you've bought everything.
Mm-hmm.
And thought, yeah, this looks good to me. Let's give it a spin.
Yeah. Yeah, because Military Orders got me into Pano.
Oh, wow.
So it was my... I really went into the knights because, yeah, somehow... Just knights. It's just a cool concept. And the whole story around it about the Catholic Church being in vogue again because they found a way to do the resurrections and get their monopoly on it.
Yeah, so absolutely. The Tech Knight aesthetic is really cool, you know, and a lot of people say, oh, you know, knights in space, that's kind of just Warhammer, but they have their own very unique sort of visual style.
Oh.
And, you know, there is the, you know, religious aspect to it. It's very interesting. There's a lot of different levels to connect on with that and a lot of different concepts when you've got what, you know, the church in Infinity is very different to the church we have today in its role and its influences, but at the same time, very similar.
Yeah.
And I think the Infinity lore has always been very rich. I mean, even the concept of having one of the figureheads of your military church be an EI, not an EI, be an Aleph recreation, that's got so many sort of ethical implications as well. It's a really interesting army with a really interesting background.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. It's I find Corvus Belli with the lore that they grab into very historical stuff, but also a very cliche, just this is the rule of cool kind of stuff, and combine it into a fiction.
Wrong with that. Yeah,
yeah. What would be cool? Space Knights. All right, let's give it a historic spin as well. And yeah, Bob's your uncle. We got a very cool, very interesting faction with very cool looking models over the years. I think I started with the older designs, but they're still very nice. I got the old Knight of the Holy Sepulchre when he was still just
S2 lad. He's still just a guy. Yeah.
One of my favorite models from the range.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you could use that. You could use that to proxy a number of things.
Yeah, he gets on the board as something else. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's really good. Yeah.
He has been a Father Knight. He has been a Teutonic Knight. He will find a way to get in the game.
Yeah, no, that's really cool. But yeah, I mean, I think Military Orders, it's a faction that draws in a lot of new players. I think Corvus Belli said a few times the Military Orders action pack is one of their best sellers and continues to be one of their best selling products to this day.
Yeah,
so I think a lot of people find
the
rule very cool.
Yeah. In that regard, like you said, they're a bit like the Space Marines. They are the most popular thing that probably Corvus Belli has next to JSA. But they have some...
That's so true. Yeah.
But they have the similarity with JSA that there's not... They're not... They're nice for beginners to start collecting because they look so cool, but they're not really a beginner army, are they?
Yeah, no, they're nice for beginners to break their teeth on.
Yeah.
You know, when you want to do the intuitive thing with knights or with JSA, which is either, you know, knight charge or, you know, be cool ninja, stab people, that's not necessarily the way Infinity operates. And a lot of new players find frustrations when they can't intuitively play the way the visuals, you know, seem to push them to play.
Yeah.
Or the kind of models that the visuals push them to play.
Yeah.
A lot of people, when they come to Infinity, they're brought in by very cool looking models, like, you know, like say the Daiyokai, or, you know, the Ninja or some of the Knight Hospitallers. But then when you start playing Infinity at a competitive level, having a backbone of line troops is really important. Yeah. And suddenly that's less ninjas on the table. 15 orders becomes a huge deal.
Yeah. Yeah, that's on one hand good, but also bad. Like, yeah, I think the ninja can use a bit of a rework. Like, they can be cheaper in my mind because, they're so... especially the Oniwaban, it either rips up half your opponent's army,
or it's feast or famine,
or it dies from a chain rifle shot. There's no in between.
Oh, and look, it's not to disparage ninjas, but I've got a mate of mine, James. He's always swearing up and down himself when he takes his ninja killer hacker and realizes for the hundredth time he's only got attack bow. You know, as well, it's also like, you know, you can have units that are very good in their own right, but don't function intuitively the way maybe a new player would want them to. Like a Teutonic Knight, he's fantastic. He's one of the best models in the faction.
Yeah.
But when a new player just sees, oh, so I can just make him run forward and maybe he'll dodge out of some arrows that I'm just running him directly into. No, that's not really going to work. Same with the Ninja as well in models like that.
Yeah.
It's, you know, even good models. And the Ninja, you know, the Ninja is quite good and does have its place. They can be tricky to use and unintuitive to use as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's when I started with Military Orders, that was in 2. And in those days, heavy infantry was far more expensive. So you thought, well, awesome, I'm going to start this heavy infantry army with all those knights. And when you made the list, you ended up like, I only got like 2 or 3. The rest is not knighty. So...
Yeah, that's a pretty common frustration.
Yeah.
And especially, you know, if you try to... I think the most knights you could fit in an MO list is around 9 or 10, but that's literally your list, and it's not a list that can succeed.
Yeah, that's for sure. Well, I've played against these bigger, let's put Jean d'Arc and slap some Hospitallers on her. And I played against it with my combined army, and I think it's probably one of the worst things I did to someone else's army, is that I actually was able to sisterize the whole Link team.
Oh.
and ended up with 3 Hospitaller knights just being sisterized.
That's horrible.
And to insult him even more, I decided that I would take these subsistorized knights and attack the one knights that are still happy and alive. So,
oh my god, the Avatar is just your feudal king.
Yeah, just one battle arena.
Yeah. Oh, that's hilarious. Yeah. Oh, I mean, look, I think Emma would struggle against an Avatar list, you know, whether you built it smartly or not. But that's terrible. Oh, bad man.
Yeah, I actually said it. Well, you lost like 1/3 of your army to me. Let's let's take on the other 1/3 with this 1/3. And
oh, that's terrible. That's so bad. Yeah,
the guy doesn't play anymore. I don't know if it's to do with.
To this week in Infinity News, prominent community member steps on new player's head. Yeah. Does not return next week at Games Day.
No. Yeah. I'm a bad man.
Oh, look, I think we're all guilty of it at one point or another. Yeah.
I had the chance
to
do
getting overexcited.
Sometimes you want to do it just to see what happens.
Yeah, absolutely. You take, you know, you see the opportunity, you take it.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. Yeah.
So let's see. We got the faction. We mostly have our good, bad, and ugly, as all our listeners know. So what makes military orders good?
Sure. So before we get to the good, bad, and ugly, I think there's some sort of primary list building contentions you want to get your head around if you want to play military orders.
All right. Yeah.
So the first one is the common pano problem. You don't have smoke or white noise to block any line of sight, so you need to shoot your way out.
Yeah.
You know, cautious moves will only get you so far. Eventually, you need to take a firefight. The main issue with military orders is that you're a faction who still needs to fight their way out of the deployment zone, but who's armed primarily with Spitfires, which aren't going to be able to take those DZ to DZ fights. So when you're building your list, you need to be very mindful you're not taking too many weapons with Spitfire range bands. And it gets even more awkward when you look at the sort of HMG range band options that the army does have. So we'll move to the good. So first up, we've got Croziers. And they're in the good category, kind of out of necessity. I think you'd much rather have Fusiliers, but at the end of the day, they're still a BS-12 troop that can pure link with other line troops.
Yeah.
So when pure linked up, they're shooting on BS-15, which is quite a lot. Now, you've got a few loadouts for the Croziers. You've got a basic combi rifle. You've got a combi rifle Blitzen EM mine. You've got a paramedic, a Spitfire, a multi-sniper, and a Spitfire with MSV2. So already you're sort of seeing that Spitfire-based identity leaking with the unique troop types.
Yeah.
If you look at Fusiliers, in their Spitfire slot, they actually have a HMG. And I think if Croziers could take a HMG, you'd probably see that fairly frequently.
Yeah.
So Croziers, they link purely with themselves. They also link with the Knight Commander, which we'll get to a bit later. And then also Constantinos, who we'll also get to later. But essentially, none of those units have long-ranged weapons. So really, when you're looking at the Croziers, you're looking at the multi-sniper rifle.
Yeah.
While you do have the Spitfire available, and the MSV2 Spitfire is an interesting piece, Military Orders doesn't really have that much MSV, and especially not long-range MSV. The awkward thing is, if you just put a Crozier Spitfire MSV into a gunfight unlinked, at the end of the day, he's just a BS-12 model. And to be getting to BS-13, which is where you'd consider it an acceptable engagement, he's going to need to be tugging around four other models, which, one, isn't always very practical, and two, probably means you're abandoning the defensive backbone of your army. So what I tend to do with
five-line infantry in mid-range gets you very overextended, because these guys will will draw some chain rifles out if they...
Oh, absolutely,
and shotguns. Yeah.
And the reality is, when you're playing a faction like Military Orders, where you've got very low AVA remotes, which I'll talk about a bit later, and the Croziers are really your cheapest order, to have a McMurrow come down and chain rifle four of your line troops, that's actually devastating on your army and your order pool. So what I tend to do when I run a pure link of Croziers is I run two Crozier snipers, a paramedic, and two regular Croziers.
Yeah.
I get a lot of strange looks about the two multi-sniper rifles, but for one, Military Orders isn't SWIC hungry. You can usually play, kind of fill up your SWIC and not really be too worried about it. Sometimes you won't fill up your SWIC. Sometimes you'll play Joan and you won't even get into that extra SWIC range. So Military Orders, it's not a SWIC hungry faction. The second thing is, when you're looking at, you know, things like war bands who want to get into your deployment zone, or even stuff like defending against pitchers, what I tend to do is I make the paramedic the link team leader, then put either sniper 8 inches away either side. So you can kind of make a 16-inch fan where you've got the two snipers on either flank.
Yeah.
That can let you cover a lot of ground. And, you know, if we're talking about big tournaments, a lot of the tables will tend to be more bare than more full of terrain.
Mm-hmm.
And there have been games I've had where my opponents had one engagement with that BS-15 sniper. It's lost the engagement. They don't really have anything else great to fight it with. And suddenly they're locked out of a significant part of the table.
Yeah. Yeah, I do the same trick with my Tuck. Is that it's a BS-12 sniper, but it's not. It's also cheap, and I don't know, with Tuck, I do it with two missile launchers. You can cover it if they are even able to stand apart, but also cover almost the same fire lanes. Then they can, yeah. Then it's face off against two snipers in this case. It's not that easy to do.
Yeah, of course, and sometimes turn one, if your opponent takes the initiative,
yeah,
a victory condition for you is just wasting enough of their time.
Yeah.
If they have to be throwing 4 smoke grenades to get into a good engagement range with your Croziers, or to get to an objective, or even just develop their pieces, you've succeeded in your defense for the first turn.
Yeah, so yeah, they're there to be lost eventually. But you, as you said, you're not Swick heavy, so you can, the units that you want and are spending your points on, they're still in the game.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, your snipers go down.
Yeah.
Maybe you get them back with the paramedic, maybe you don't. Either way, you've kind of gotten, you know, order battery sitting at the back.
Yeah.
So there is going to be a pain point with the Croziers, though. They cost 11 points, where really, they're a Fusilier with Religious. Now, when you're looking at a troop this cheap, I think Religious is a good thing. If you didn't have Religious, you just have nothing. And most of the time, you do just want to stay up and keep gunfighting. But when your cheapest model, aside from your remotes, is 11 points, that starts to put pressure on your army.
Mm-hmm.
And one extra point doesn't sound like a lot, but in this army, you'd be surprised. But nonetheless, Croziers make the good list as a necessary defensive element.
Yeah.
So next on the list, we have Order Sergeants on the good list. And they fall into the necessary category as well. So Order Sergeants, the cheapest one is 13 points and just comes with a combi rifle. From there, you have two divisions of Order Sergeants. You have just regular order sergeants, and then you have escort sergeants, which are order sergeants that have an aux bot, which is a 6-4 bot with a heavy flamethrower. So the flavors of order sergeant are a heavy rocket launcher assault pistol for 1.5 SWC and 15 points, and a hacker with a combi rifle, 1.5 SWC, 18 points, and the escort versions will run you 2 to 3 points more than the normal version.
Mm-hmm.
So order sergeants, they're BS-12, WIP-13, one-arm BTS-3 model. And these are another one that, you know, they're in the good category because they're necessary. They're necessary for two reasons. The first one is they're your army's cheap hacker. And I say cheap, aware that the cheapest one's 18 points. The other reason that they're necessary is that they're the basis for the Order Sergeant's fire team, which can include Bulleteers, which are very potent gunfighters, and is a Harris you'll find yourself running a decent amount of the time. The Order Sergeant being WIP-13 and BTS-3 with a hacking device, you know, also very good. WIP-13 sort of the benchmark for where you want to be, and BTS-3 helps you out a lot more than you'd think. You've also got a lot of really good forking opportunities with the escort sergeant hacker who has the aux bot. You can do things where you come around a corner on someone with the aux bot, your combi rifle, and your hacking device if they're HI.
Yeah.
And if they dodge, they get hacked. If they reset, they get blown to pieces.
Yeah.
If they shoot you, you say shoot back and put a heavy flamer on them.
Yeah.
You know, the escort sergeant, it's 22 points. That can be a bit expensive, but it's, you know, I think in the right situation, the right list, it's absolute gold.
The one thing, Oxblood can be devastating. It's like, it's the high-tech warband.
Yeah, absolutely. It's also great for deployment zone defense.
Yeah.
You have a forward peripheral that if it dies, it's not going to cost you an order. So if you've got a Morlock running through, you know, your DZ, you can start putting a lot of pressure on it, dropping those heavy flamers. And if it decides to trade with your Oxbot, that's a huge win for you.
Yeah.
They've spent, you know, X amount of orders getting to your deployment zone, and you've just turned it off with a, you know, with a 5-point not an order.
Yeah.
It's kind of the equivalent of a living mine.
Yeah, you can place it anywhere. Yeah, discontinuous damage because of the flamer. It is taking out bigger targets as well because, yeah, you filled your armor, absolutely. You filled your armor twice. Oh, all right, there goes your heavy infantry.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. So the one profile I'd maybe tell people to stay away from is the heavy rocket launcher, order sergeant, and escort sergeant. They're a BS-12 model with with no visual mods and no real opportunity to increase that ballistic skill.
Mm-hmm.
The order sergeant's fire team, it's only a Harris. It can't be a core. And even if it was a core, I don't think you'd have enough models in the order sergeant's toolbox to fill out a core. So I'd recommend keeping them in that supportive role as either hackers or as the unfortunate but necessary basis to have a bulleteer Harris.
Yeah. Well, I always love my heavy rocket launcher, and this one's no exception. Because the most of the heavy rocket launcher combinations, they are mostly a cheaper heavy weapon to get. Yeah,
absolutely.
And this one also has an assault pistol, and with the combination of the Oxbot, you can do long range, but you can also just get very close and go Oxbotting and assault pistoling.
Yeah, that's very true. It can be, you know, I don't know if I'd personally be taking long range fights just on burst two if he's an escort sergeant. The order sergeants can go into the Crozier's fire team. And like you said, Ramon, the heavy rocket launcher, it's only 15 points.
Yeah.
So if you've got, and you know, we were talking a bit before about how military orders isn't a SWIC intensive army.
Yeah.
So if you just need a cheap way to spend your SWC, that order sergeant HRL, no, it's not terrible at all.
I've done the whole assault pistoling and going oxbotting. So someone expecting them to.
Yeah, that's pretty cool as well.
Someone just expecting, oh, that order sergeant will probably be an ARO piece. No. This one isn't a very active piece. It's very cheap and expendable.
Yeah, it's very cheap. Yeah. And, you know, I think we'll talk a bit more in this episode about models we'll look at and we'll go, wow, that's really cheap.
Yeah.
And that can really seem strong in a vacuum. The important thing to remember is your order backbone is actually quite expensive.
Yeah.
So when you're looking at things and you're saying, oh, that's cheap, it can kind of even out to being on rate for a faction that's this expensive. Yeah. So that's why I think people very much lean towards those cheap and efficient options. It's because you don't have the most points in the pool to splash.
Yeah. All right. All right. For the order sergeants. Yeah.
Mm. So next in the good pile, we've got a really great addition that only came recently, and that's the Raven Eye officer. So Military Orders and Corregidor both got this as part of a recent campaign, and it's AVA-1. It's a BS-11 forward observer mine layer that has a submachine gun, an E-Murat, a flash pulse, and EM mines. And this guy's amazing. He's the perfect model. You slide in right at the end of your list building where you kind of have an awkward amount of points left over you don't know what to do with. The Raven Eye is primarily a defensive piece. That mind layer is really valuable and something you don't have a lot of in the faction. If you're playing missions like Mind Wipe or Frostbite, where you know someone's going to want to be going somewhere particular in your deployment zone, the Raven Eye is fantastic. It's got the mine. It's got the Emirat as well, which is a brutal template to be hit by. And look, worse comes to worse and you need a late game specialist, the Raven Eye is a forward observer.
Yeah, few short range weapons, but if they think they can attack him from afar, it's still flash pulsing or forward observing.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. No, a Whip 13 flash pulse.
Yeah.
I mean, we've all been screwed over by a Whip 13 flash pulse at some point in our training careers.
Join the club.
Yeah.
Disappointment. Yeah.
Every new player is rite of passage.
But Achilles is so good, he can attack. Yeah, and they found, now you've been critted by a flash pulse.
But no, the Raven Eye is very good. You know, he's not going to rock the world, but he's a great defensive element. He's a good late game specialist. You know, when you're at the end of your list building and you've got an awkward amount of points left, the Raven Eye is very good to slip in. He can also be, you know, a model who goes out and shoots your opponent's pitchers once they're out. His Emirat's good at that. If they're, you know, if they shot two pitchers from a fire team, he can put the Emirat across both of those pitchers. Mm. That's really handy. Yeah, no, the Raven Eye is fantastic. Nothing bad to say about the Raven Eye.
No, for sure.
Actually, sorry, there is one bad thing about the Raven Eye.
You can only get one?
And that's ADA.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course, you can only get one. Oh, if you could have two of these guys, you know, that'd be... You know, that'd be really significant for being able to help defend your deployment zone, I think.
Yeah, you have to
probably
play
why they only
you
gave
have to
you
play
one.
O12 for that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, well, you bought the Raven Eye. I guess you just got to buy the rest of O12 now.
Yeah, for sure. That's how they get you.
Yeah, classic games company marketing.
Yeah.
All right, so moving on, we've got the Tech B. I think every Pano player who's played with a Tech B will sing the praises of it. It's a 5-point irregular model that has a flash pulse and a pistol. The real cheese, though, is that it's a specialist operative and it has a gizmo kit.
Yeah.
So the gizmo kit, you can sort of imagine it. The Tech B is to an engineer what a paramedic is to a doctor.
Mm-hmm.
You don't get rerolls. You go off of the model's fizz. And the important thing to remember, you can't clear states. But in a faction where you've actually got one of the better Bulleteer link teams, and where you can end up depending on things like TR bots, the Tech B is really valuable.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I've seen this. Yeah, it's like an upgraded war core that you get.
Oh, totally. Yeah. I mean, for 2 points, you get quite a lot packed on.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the important thing to remember, too, is, and we'll kind of talk about this with paramedics a bit later as well, the tags in the faction actually have a higher gizmo kit rating than most do. They get gizmo kitted on a 13.
Hmm.
I've had opponents crapping themselves because they're, you know, they've shot my tick. It's unconscious, and they just need to kill it because there's a Tech B, you know, in gizmo kit range. Because you've actually got a really decent chance of getting that tick back with a Tech B.
Yeah. I don't want to tick back with a Tech B.
I mean, look, at the end of the day, it is one roll on a 13 or one roll on a 10 if you're some other kind of remote. So it's not going to happen every time. But for 5 points, she's great for filling out your army slots. And she actually does put in the work in the list as well.
Yeah, and the threat is there. So yeah, as you're standing there, you was like, I think I still need to fire another round of the tick balloon because Tech B might be able.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, late game when everything's gone to hell and you just need to defend, you can just stand her up and she can cost them an order or two flash pulsing.
Yeah. She great. Yeah. 5 points. Mm.
No. And she's, you know, she's a great mascot of Pano as well. So it's good to see that she's, you know, she's good in the game. She's got some great models. It's fantastic.
And once she goes Jeanne d'Arc, then she goes regular as well. So
that's true. You actually do get additional value out of the Tech B and the War Corps if you're running Joan lists.
Yeah.
So we'll talk about Joan lists a bit later in the episode, but essentially Joan of Arc has a skill inspiring leadership that that turns irregular orders into regular orders.
Yeah.
I've had a few games playing Joan where my opponent's gone, oh, why aren't you standing that war core up? And I'm saying, because he's a 3-point order. Why would I throw that away?
That's when you start hiding. Now the news is important.
Oh, I mean, look, you're seeing CB roll out with these robot journalists now. It's because too many of the real ones were getting shot.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Yeah, it's a hazardous job.
Yeah, they need to. I hope they're getting paid danger pay or something. Yeah. All right. You know, I think, you know, the War Corps, it's a very classic sort of defensive element. All factions have it. I don't want to dwell on it too much. It does have some additional value in this faction. One, where it's very cheap and you need that. And two, where you have the potential of running it in a Joan list where it's regular.
Yeah.
All right. Moving on to our next good. But I would also label this one as good in the sense that it's necessary. And this is the Pan-Oceanian Black Friar.
Mm.
The Black Friar, it's Ballistics 13, Arm 2, BTS 3, 1 wound, with the Moneymaker, a multispectral visor, level 2.
Mm-hmm.
It's got 3 loadouts. The first one is a Black Friar FTO with Sixth Sense. It's got a heavy rocket launcher, a nanopulsar, and a multi-pistol. The next is another Black Friar FTO, who has Discover plus 3, a multi-rifle, nanopulsar, drop bears, albedo, and a biometric visor. And the third one is a Black Friar sniper, multi-sniper. But it's not an FTO.
Mm-hmm.
So in terms of these profiles, I've said the Black Friar as a whole is good. Realistically, that first heavy rocket launcher profile is the only one you're going to be taking.
Yeah.
We'll talk about it more a bit later, and I'm very aware I keep saying we'll talk about it a bit later, but when you look at the multispectral visor you have in the faction, it's all close to mid-range. You know, Bakunin's very popular at the moment, both because of its power and because it's the new flashy thing, but if you've got a Moira multi-sniper pure-linked sitting on top of a building in your opponent's DZ, Indigo Brother Constantinos, he can't do anything about that.
No.
Your Crozier MSV2, he can't do anything about that. And a lot of times these heavy MIM elements are used defensively, or they're pushed up the board for an offensive run, then left there. So the Pan-Ocean Black Friar heavy rocket launcher, I think it's a necessary element. If you're taking two Pan-O lists to a tournament, one of them must have a Black Friar heavy rocket launcher.
Yeah, so you can deal with else, any long-range mimetism kind of units.
Yeah, I took Pano to CanCon, which is our Infinity Nationals here in Australia. I managed to come top 10, and my one loss was given to me by a really great Druze player in our area called Luke Henry, and he just gear-checked me with Armand Lemoon, and I didn't have the Black Friar, so I couldn't deal with him.
Yeah.
So the Black Friar is a very necessary piece. It's got a few little kinks as well that make it really good. The first one is that nanopulsar. It's one of your few sort of complementary templates you have in the faction besides shotguns. The other one is the multi-pistol. The multi-pistol is actually very potent. And with a CC score of 17, if you're in a fire team, you can very much run in on a model that doesn't have CC training, get the burst two, and probably blow its head off with a DA round in CC. That's something you can do. The other thing to note is that the Black Friar also makes the Crozier MSV2 Spitfire look pretty bad. The Crozier MSV2 Spitfire is 22 points. For 25 points, you get the Black Friar heavy rocket launcher.
Mm-hmm.
So for 3 more points, it's a huge upgrade.
Yeah. Yeah, I make the failure of overlooking this dude because, you're looking at 25 to 30 points unit and then you think, well, I could put the Teutonic Knight in there for that amount of points. And then, but by the end of it, you're missing out on some long-range important stuff. And I've played even against people who used the multi-rifle drop bear one And that's very handy if your link is going forward and you want to throw up a bit of defense, so you're throwing drop bears left and right.
Yeah, the multi-rifle one,
yeah,
it's awkward to fit in.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, the Blackfriar, it's, I think if it was a wild card, it would get a lot further.
Yeah.
But it's only available in the Crozier fire team.
Yeah.
And fitting it in at 28 points can be a bit difficult.
Yeah.
But, you know, it does have its merits. I encourage everyone to give it a try if it's something they're interested in. What I will talk about, though, briefly, is the Blackfriar multi-sniper. Now, as I said before, this isn't an FTO model. And I think if it was an FTO,
it would be military orders. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Military orders would have a lot less issues. Realistically, you don't want to put that heavy rocket launcher on ARO because you can get outranged very easily. But this means if you're coming up against a faction with smoke, you're kind of conceding the board inactive, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
They can move up behind that smoke. And that's where I was saying before, you want to set up your defenses to waste as much of their time as possible. Being burst one in reactive and only burst two in active, it just doesn't cut the cheese.
Mm.
So if I was to look at the Blackfriar profiles, if we go good, bad, and ugly, heavy rocket launcher, good, multi-rifle, ugly, sniper rifle, bad.
Yeah.
So you've got the whole show just in the one model.
Yeah, I think it was a purposeful choice because, yeah, the other two are FTO, so they really, went there for...
No, it's definitely a very purposeful choice.
We don't give them the sniper. Then we got this Kamau on our hands.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I was about to say. Every other Pano sectorial has their MSV2 reactive and active gunfighter.
Yeah.
You know, you got the, you know, some are better than others. I'd the much Bolts, rather have the Kamau, the Camus than Bog Marie.
Yeah.
But yeah, Bolts, Bog Marie, Kamau.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Friar is not allowed to join that club.
No. Oh, it's very frustrating. Yeah. It's very frustrating. The other thing that's frustrating about the Blackfriar is that it doesn't have shock immunity. And for what can end up being such a linchpin model in your army list, you'd be surprised how much that comes up and you can't paramedic them.
Yeah.
Playing military orders, you're usually running a lot of paramedics because they actually have a higher value for you than doctors do because of link bonuses to shooting medkits and because of a
high
all around high fizz. All right, so moving on, we'll move to one of the defining units of the sectorial, and that's the Teutonic Knights. So the Teutonic Knights, they're move 6-2, CC 22 with martial arts level 2. They're fizz 14 with dodge plus 3 to the stat, and then dodge plus 1 inch. Arm 3, BTS 3, 2 wounds with shock immune, religious, and impetuous. So first looking at these models, you might look at them as impetuous models and go, that's sort of strange. You know, are these war bands? No, not really. So you've got a few different profiles. The first one is the Teutonic Knight light shotgun Panzerfaust at 19 points. This guy's fantastic. He can, you know, shoot whoever you need in the head. If you come around a corner and someone tries to template you, you're dodging on a 17.
Yeah.
It's very easy for you to dodge around. Next up, you've got that same profile, but a Tinbot minus 3, which is really useful. You can link that with someone like DeFurzen, who we'll talk about later, or an Order Sergeant, and suddenly their hacking game's a lot more potent. I'll talk a bit more about it later, but I think Military Orders, in terms of the hacking hierarchy in Pano, is probably second or third. It has a very strong hacking game.
Mm-hmm.
And part of it is that you have this Tinbot you can strap to a lot of your models.
For not that many
extremely,
points.
And who's an extremely useful model.
Yeah.
If you've got DeFurzen, who's a Spitfire guy, giving him a shotgun is really, really good.
Yeah.
Next up, you've got a submachine gun Panzerfaust Specialist Operative at 21 points. I'd say this one is more of a niche pick, but it does come in handy in some missions. After that, you've got a missile launcher, which is a fantastic defensive element. You've at 28 points. You've got a Spitfire at 29 points, and a Spitfire NCO at 31 points. So after the breakdown of the unit profile, there's lots of ways you can use the Teutonic Knights. One of them is to essentially... Oh, and an important note, they're only AVA 3. If they had higher AVA, I think it's like we said about the Blackfriar Sniper.
Yeah.
You'd probably see much more Teutonic Knights on the table.
Yeah.
In terms of quantity.
Yeah, if so, Corvus Belli ever decides to make military orders better, we know these two elements. Make the Blackfriar FTO and just put the AVA up on the... And then military order just jumps a tier.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So you've got a few ways of using the Teutonic Knights. The first one is as a Harris, as a pure Harris. So you'd take like the Spitfire, the missile launcher, and the light shotgun and have that as a Harris. There's a few reasons this is good. The first one is that missile launcher on reactive, it's a very strong defensive element. You've got a BS-13 model shooting it twice. And if he's ever in a bad engagement, he dodges on a 17.
Yeah.
Say you're coming up against Hakislam, you've got your missile launcher set up, and suddenly a Mukhtar starts shooting at you with a Red Fury through smoke. Instead of kind of being in that sticky situation where you feel forced to shoot those two dice at -6, you dodge on a 17. What's also really good is that you're a 2-wound religious model with decent armor. That means if you get hit, one, you've got a decent chance of not taking a wound, and two, you just stay up.
Yeah.
I've had a lot of, you know, talking about smoke shooting, I've had a lot of games where my opponent's been shooting me through smoke. I've taken a dodge, succeeded, but just stayed up. I'm happy for you to waste more time shooting this Teuton who you're probably not going to kill. And even if you do, I will have soaked so much of your order pool. I'm happy with that.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, he gets into category like the Tenko missile launcher and the Riot Girl missile launcher for just absolutely staying power and the attrition of it. If you're able to hit even once, it's a missile. So it's an explosive hit.
Mm.
Yeah, so it's not an engagement you want to have for long. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, that's a really good point about it being similar to the Tenko and Riot Girl in role. And it shares a similarity with the Crozier snipers, where a lot of players who are very risk averse will look at your sniper or look at your missile launcher and just say, I'm going to spend the orders to go around that. I don't even want to engage it.
Yeah.
And that's also very powerful.
It's just too risky to lose the firefight and be blown up in an instant because 3-hit kill.
So having this Harris being pure of the structure I described earlier, it's got a few good things about it. The first is you get the +3 to discover. In military orders, you don't have great MSV like we talked about. So essentially getting that +3 to discover is really relevant.
Yeah.
The second thing is that they keep up with each other. A really common maneuver I'll do is on my active turn, if the sight lines are clear, I'll actually break them out of the Harris. They all do their impetuous move, then reform them once they've completed that impetuous move. And that's a maneuver you can only really do if you have that all three of them being Teutonic Knights.
Yeah.
In the Teutonic Knights, you've actually got an incredibly viable Alpha Strike coming out of your second group, Group 2, with 5 orders. You've got the impetuous order, where what you do is you do your first move, then you dodge, which is a total of 10 inches of movement.
Yeah.
You've got 5 regulars after that. And then in this season, an O12's prestige. So in reality, you're looking at 7 orders with models who can move 10 inches per order. It only takes 2 or 3 of those to cross the board.
I got a +1 dodge, so it's 9 inches.
Oh, 9 inches. Yeah. Thanks for correcting me. But
either way,
really great movement potential.
Yeah.
So a very common thing when building your list structure is, you know, putting a big gun, put your big gun, your core, and your specialist in group 1, and group two have the Chewton Harris, a specialist, and an order monkey. And, you know, you knock down heads with the big gun, and then the Chewtons run in and deal a lot of damage. My last game at CanCon, I had my Tick Belang in group one, shot down all of his ARO pieces, ran in with the Chewtons, and I think when it passed to my opponent's turn, he had three or four models left.
Whoa.
They're very potent fighters. Having that second wound means that, you know, say you're, you know, playing a Biowon Kitsune. If she takes a hit or if something goes wrong, that's the end of your attack run. And that's also the end of all those orders you spent to get her in that position. If a Teutonic Knight takes a hit, it keeps ticking.
Yeah.
And you've got the Spitfire to cover the distance and knock heads down.
Yeah.
And the missile launcher having a DACC weapon is still relevant. A lot of times, you know, you'll just kind of dogpile onto someone. With their really good dodge stat, you can also do it to hiding tags. You come around the corner with three Chewtons. If they try and lay a template on you, you all just dodge into CC and then rip its heart out.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. So they succeed against heavily armored units. They succeed against light armored units, where your one weakness is hacking, really.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll get kind of more towards that a bit later. So that's the first way you can use the Teutonic Knights, which is as a pure Harris. The second way you can use them is essentially as your core, where you just sort of strap a paramedic and maybe an engineer if you want to that Chewton Harris and have it become more of your main defensive element
mm-hmm.
and sort of a late game offensive piece with the Spitfire.
Yeah, stand back more with the missile launcher and just go at it.
And, you know, when that missile launcher is BS-14, there are a lot of, you know, points in the game where actively shooting that missile in active turn can become viable and actually highly effective. If you can spot an angle where someone's tried to hide something and pound it with the missile launcher outside of that model's good range, you've actually got a very good chance of succeeding. I think my biggest triumph with this was finding an angle on a Magariba Guard, shooting those two missiles downrange. You know, she's trying to dodge on a 10 or shoot back at -6. It's very likely one of those missiles is going to land.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah.
So the Chewtons are very potent as a core and as a Harris. Unfortunately, you can't duo them, which is a shame. And the last way you could run them is just as solo pieces, as heavy war bands. I personally wouldn't recommend doing this. I think at AVA3, they're so valuable to what your army wants to do that using them as solo pieces is kind of a waste. But if you're playing an armory mission and just need, you know, want to do that slow trickle of models to slowly, you know, fatigue your opponent who might be in the armory, that is a good way to use a lone Chewton.
Yeah, now you're going to stand on the objective. All right, you're dead. Now the next one going to stand on the objective. And just Chewtons wave them three times.
Chewtons are very good offensively, very good defensively, and are also great at holding objectives because of their high dodge and good armor.
Yeah, for sure.
So there's a lot of value there.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't see a list where you don't fully use the AVA and just bring all three all the time.
Then being impetuous, you know, as I talked about with that kind of Chewton slingshot, it's actually a very useful trait. When that fire team falls apart, then the impetuous becomes really handy as like a, you know, oh crap, everything's going to hell. That extra order can come in really clutch.
You're probably in a position where you can use it right away.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Or like, you know, say you get engaged with a model in CC on your opponent's active turn. It goes back to your turn, and you don't really want to spend the order to CC them, right?
Yeah.
The impetuous order is fantastic for that. It's like, well, here's this free order.
Free either
it goes my way or it doesn't.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. So next up, we're going to move to another model I'd consider pretty defining to the faction. And that's Father Officer Gabriel DeFerzin, who I think is probably might be the best hacker in Pano. So let's run through this guy. He's MOVE44, CC22, BS14, FIS14, WHIP14. What a lineup. Yeah. Armor 4, BTS6, 2 wounds. He's got a hacking device upgraded with Trinity, which means you've got all the hacking programs in a hacking device
plus
Trinity.
Yeah.
Which is huge.
Yeah.
You're shock immune, you're martial arts level 3, and you have stealth. He's only got 2 profiles, which is a Spitfire with an AP Spitfire pistol, AP shock CC weapon at 1.5 swick and 51 points. And then also that, but a lieutenant version comes in at the same amount of points. DeFerzin falls in a place because you've in Infinity, you've got a bell curve of things you want on a model. On the one end, you've got low points, which is where you want the tool you're looking for, and you want it to be lean. You don't want to bloat it with too much stuff. Then as you go up the bell curve, you get things like Pheasant agents, who, you know, they have some tools you want, but also a lot of tools you don't. Like, you know, weird X visors or sort of boutique weapons, kind of like Drew's paying for breaker pistols.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you end up with bloat like that. And then at the other end of the bell curve, you come to expensive models that are lean in what they're paying for. Gabriel DeFerzin, he's not a model that fits in that cheap part of the bell curve, but he's also not in the middle. He's at the end. He's very lean as a gunfighter and very lean as a hacker. He has the ballistic skill you want. He has the whip skill you want. He's got the armor stats you want. But he doesn't have anything ridiculous like I don't know. He doesn't have like a Blitzen or something. Mm-hmm. Something you're not going to use. He doesn't have a biometric visor. So he's actually built very lean. Being both a hacker with Trinity provides a lot of opportunities. You're threatening your opponent's HIs and tags while also being able to protect yourself in a hacking fight and also melt your opponent's brain if you need to.
Yeah.
And at BTS6, usually behind some kind of easy firewall, like the Teutonic we discussed earlier, he's actually very hard for a killer hacker to put down.
Yeah, BTS9. Go at it.
Yeah.
Nice.
Absolutely. He's looking for sixes to pass his saves from a Trinity.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous. So he's very, very good. I don't think, you know, I think with the time we have today, I don't think I could overstate how good DeFerzin is and how defining he is to how the faction plays.
Yeah.
When we're talking about building for matchups, Gabriel DeFerzin is in every one of my anti-hacking lists. He's just that valuable. But do not take the lieutenant version.
Ah, that's what I wanted to ask. A lot of
players get sucked into the lieutenant version.
Yeah, it's easy to do, right? Because he's still 51 points, and if you take him, might be a handy way to put a lieutenant somewhere, especially if you're going to start putting extra knights in this list.
You know, I guess this isn't a bad time to talk about Military Order's lieutenant problem, because they actually do have a lieutenant issue. If you look at your lieutenant lineup, your cheapest lieutenant actually starts with the Teutonic Knight at 19 points. And strangely enough, that's probably the lieutenant I end up running most of the time. Your lieutenants are all fairly expensive. They're fairly telegraphed. And not a lot of them add anything by being a lieutenant or are not something you'd want to take otherwise. We'll talk a bit about the Knight Commander a little later, because he's the exception. And the Knight Commander, just by being in the faction, kind of gives you a saving. You can save face a bit by saying, oh, well, any of my models could be my lieutenant. But like you're saying, it's tempting to take DeFerzin as a lieutenant.
Yeah.
He's a model you likely want to take anyway. You can actually use the lieutenant order really efficiently on DeFerzin, where orders are something you're hurting for, but you will not get the full value out of DeFerzin if you take his lieutenant order, but if you take his lieutenant profile, because there's one of two outcomes that'll happen when you take that profile. The first outcome is you put him in your core because you need to keep him safe. And for most of the game, he sits in that core, not doing anything. You need your core as your defensive backbone. 50 points on
the bench, yeah.
Yeah, he's 50 points on the bench. It's very unlikely you're going to kind of stand him up and go. And if you are, it's a very late game maneuver because mm-hmm. you're so scared that he'll die. Therefore, you're not getting the value out of him for the first two turns. The other thing is, we just talked about how good it feels to use that lieutenant order on him. But if he's parked in that, if he's parked in that core, he's not going to use that lieutenant order either. So that's outcome number one. You leave him in that core. Yeah, you've got 50 points on the bench, 50 points and 1.5 swick on the bench, which you can't afford. The other outcome is that you run him up, you're really gung-ho, your opponent finds a line and blows him up. Those are the two outcomes you find when you're playing.
And then you're in loss of lieutenant.
DeFerzin. Exactly. You're in loss of lieutenant, which is you're in loss of lieutenant. You've lost one of the linchpin pieces in your army. You know, we'll talk about Joan a bit later on, but part of what hurts so much about losing DeFerzin when he's your lieutenant is that he's one of your main gunfighters, he's your main hacker, and he's your lieutenant. You've got so many eggs in that basket that if he goes, it's probably game over.
Yeah.
And that's why I think players will begin taking him as that gung-ho DeFerzin and then regress to that core DeFerzin, because they'll have these negative experiences where they're finding that DeFerzin is just getting blown up.
Yeah.
And once you play him enough in that core, you realize this is not an efficient use of my points.
Yeah. And, but there's a ray of sunshine. Just get away from it. And yeah, you're nothing command father officer.
yeah. You know, essentially
leave it playing to a desk jockey.
Yeah. Essentially playing DeFerzin as a lieutenant. You're really just not setting yourself up for success. And, you know, maybe you've mastered the ways of DeFerzin and you can perfectly balance and when to keep him safe and when to run him out. And if so, more power to you.
Yeah.
But I just don't think it's something that the average player will find success with or that should be encouraged.
No.
Now, DeFerzin's special for a few more reasons. The next one is he's one of your few wild cards in the faction. And Military Orders actually has some really great duo options. A lot of times you can kind of get locked up in list building because you make your core, you make your Harris, and then you kind of don't know what to do with the rest of your points. Well, you've actually got some really efficient duos. One of those is DeFerzin with a bulleteer heavy shotgun.
Ooh.
This is good for a few reasons. The first one is the heavy shotgun covers that 0 to 8 inches where DeFerzin is a bit weaker. Yes, he's got a pistol. Yes, I've blown people's brains out with that pistol, but against like a HI, that heavy shotgun, you'd much rather be rocking that. The second thing is, it's also great for defense. If you deploy DeFerzin behind a barrier and just put the bulleteer in a barrier in front of that barrier, whatever comes into your DZ, it's going to have to go through him first.
And he being a repeater, one, yeah.
Yeah, and the third one is that he's a repeater. So this is good defensively and offensively. Defensively, something runs at you, they get spotlit, they have to go through the bulleteer shotgun, and then they get to you. That's sort of three stops of failure before you ever get to DeFerzin. The other one is, if you're on the active turn and you've got a, let's say there's a moderator hacker on a roof, what you can do is you can activate DeFerzin. You keep DeFerzin out of that model's hacking range, but walk the bulleteer in hacking range as part of that duo. Now, if that moderator hacker hacks the bulleteer, they're going to cop a brain blast from DeFerzin. So in essence, you'd be trading the Bulleteer for whatever hacker they've got, but that's a trade you'll usually always make because of how the army plays in practice. The second thing is, if they try and hack DeFurzen, suddenly he's got that firewall again, and he's going to win that face-to-face.
Yeah.
So in a faction where you don't have pitchers, Bulleteers and link teams in general are how you extend that hacking network aggressively.
Yeah. Oh, that's actually a very nice combination.
It's a very nice combination. Yeah. The next one is the next one in terms of duos, the Knight of Santiago. It's quite an expensive duo, and I don't quite know if it's competitively viable just because of the points you sink into it. But realistically, yeah,
around 90 points, 94 points.
It's almost 100 points.
Yeah.
Yeah. But realistically, it's like in Corregidor linking the Mobile Brigada, Hacker, and Jazz. Realistically,
yeah,
there's not much in the game that's going to overcome that.
Yeah.
So while I wouldn't say it's competitively viable, it's a fun thing to try, and I'd give it a shot. The last one is with a Knight of Montessa. Now, this is really useful just kind of as a slingshot maneuver, where in a list, if you're taking DeFurzen and you're taking a Knight of Montessa, which you'll probably be doing anyway, you just start them as a duo and get some free movement out of it, and you're not heartbroken when the link breaks.
Yeah, it's just going on to do other nicer stuff.
We might talk a bit about fireteam construction a bit later in the podcast, but your duos, they're very good, and you can do some really wacky things with the duos. One thing I like to do is take two Knight of Montessa paramedics in missions that, you know, sound like last launch or evacuation, which are pretty order intensive. Fun fact, I was actually the guy who made last launch for the loss of Lieutenant mission challenge, so that's my baby.
Congratulations.
Yeah,
I'm not jealous or anything. Yeah. I put out my own mission.
Yeah, yeah. But one thing you can do is, you know, let's say you've got evacuation, you've got all those HUTs you've got to get.
Yeah,
you start those two Montessas duoed and 8 inches apart from each other in a sort of central location. Now, the way link teams work is they only break and you only lose the bonuses at the end of the order. So you get them to drive 8 inches in the opposite direction and then 6 inches in the opposite direction. They're halfway up the board on totally opposite ends.
Oh, yeah.
And you've only spent one order.
Oh, that's
insane.
That's awesome. Oh, that's one.
Yeah.
That's one for
so
the
that's
books.
One. Yeah. So that's one thing. One thing I'd really keep in mind with duos, you can use them to launch Knights of Montessas, or lone Knights of Montessas, or lone Bulleteers very efficiently.
Yeah.
If DeFurzen, you could even take DeFurzen and a Bulleteer Spitfire and have them run in opposite directions. You can use them as launch pads for each other. It's very efficient, a thing to keep an eye on when you're list building, because it is worth building towards those slingshot duos.
Great, yeah, that's one that I will keep in mind, especially the two Montessa combination, because I like my bikes. So.
Oh, Montessas are fantastic, yeah.
So what's the next good thing on the list?
So the next good thing on the list is Hawkins. So Hawkins, he's CC-23, BS-14, Fizz-14, WHIP-13, ARM-4, BTS-6. He's got CC attack shock, dodge plus 1 inch, frenzy, martial arts level 3, religious, specialist operative, and stealth. He's got a multi-marksman's rifle, a multi-pistol, and a DACC weapon coming in at 36 points. So looking at Hawkins, when you're building Harris's and the like, generally what you want is your main gunfighter, your specialist, and then your toolbox unit. So in Corregidor, that might be something like your Evader, Spitfire, Valyria, your Hacker, and Jaguar, your Smoke Thrower.
Mm-hmm.
What Kyle Hawkins does is, first off, he doesn't cost you any SWIC, which can be really useful sometimes in list construction. The second thing is he combines your specialist and your gunfighter into one model like DeFurzen does. He's also one of your wildcard options as well, meaning he slots in really well to duos. So he's another very efficient piece. He can hold his own with the multi-marksman's rifle at BS-14, and it's one of your few armor-piercing guns in the faction. The CC attack Shock, it looks like a weird one, but it's useful, because what you can do is you can roll up in CC with the multi-pistol or the DACC weapon, hit them with double action, but then it's also Shock, which is fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think Hawkins is someone who I could talk about at length like DeFurzen. He's just very good as a zero-swick gunfighter who combines two roles to make really good duos.
Yeah, what's more to say about him? Like, yeah. Mostly I surpass him because I'm like, yeah, he's just like a knight hospitaller. But yeah, the kit that he brings and the combination of those things makes him interesting.
Yeah, I mean, look, he's actually a fair bit better than a knight hospitaller.
Yeah.
Just because of how he could link, and because he has that armor piercing on both of his guns.
Yeah.
Multi-pistols are actually really good weapons if you can get in close.
Yeah, sure, yeah.
All right, well, thanks, Hawkins. That was a very brief stop. Moving right along. Moving right along, we've got the Knight of the Holy Sepulchre. This guy, he's one of your money makers. So let's run through the stats. He's got CC-22, BS-14, Fizz-13, Whip-13, Armor-5, BTS-9.
Yeah, that's insane. Yeah.
That BTS-9, it's super relevant. Sorry, I should go through the stat line more, then I'll start talking on the BTS-9. We've got BS attack plus one damage, CC attack plus one damage, Shock immune, natural born warrior, religious troop, stealth, surprise attack -3, and veteran. And he's also got a holo projector. Being a veteran means he can't be isolated. So if someone oblivions you, which is usually the way to get around the high BTS models, it's not going to do anything.
Nope.
You might pass a face to face, but it's not going to isolate him, meaning the only option you have left is carbonite, which is damage 13 DA.
Yeah.
And if he gets hit with carbonite, he's passing on 4s or 5s. So realistically, and especially if you put fairy dust on your HI, which in some cases is viable, you're just not going to crack it.
No.
You need ones. So part of what makes him so unhackable as well is his holo projector. You can use it to go through hacking nets, because essentially they're, you know, playing straws on which one's the real one. People usually have two reactions to the holo projector. The first one is they go, oh crap, and just start shooting at whatever holo projector they feel is the right one. Then most of the time you reveal with the one they're not expecting and blow their head off. The second one is, and this is the, if you're playing against one, this is the correct thing to do, is to hold against them.
Yeah.
But your opponent concedes so much ground by holding that you can get in a really optimal position.
Yeah, because you can just move. And
Imagine this scenario where you're being locked down by a missile launcher.
Yeah.
You walk forward with the Knight of the Holy Sepulchre. Your opponent says, oh, I'll shoot that one. You blow their head off with the other one. Otherwise, they hold. You get into a position where you're in a good firing position. And then you blow their head off.
Yeah.
There's not many good defensive ways to get around a Knight of the Holy Sepulchre, you know, in a straight up defensive hard ARO. So he's got three profiles. The first one is a multi-marksman rifle plus one burst, heavy pistol and shock CC weapon at 49 points. This is the one you'll see the least. The next is as above, but has chain of command at 53 points. I think having the chain of command option means you don't see the first option very much, because even aside of the chain of command thing of LT dies, new LT, yay, having him be a specialist in the midfield is really good.
Yeah.
The last one, which is the one you'll see the most, And the one that I think makes in a lot of lists is the Knight of the Holy Sepulchre NCO, AP heavy machine gun with a heavy pistol at 56 points and one swick. So we were talking a bit earlier in the episode about the general list building concepts of military orders, which is that you've got a slew of Spitfires, you've got very few good long-range band stuff, and one thing we've sort of been touching on as we discover the faction is that there's very little armor piercing.
Yeah.
The Knight of the Holy Sepulchre, he ticks so many boxes with his AP heavy machine gun. You've got that long-range arrow where you're BS-14, so you're likely to win the engagement. You've got 5 armor and 2 wounds, so if you do fail, you've got a strong fail case wherein you're probably not going to die from it, unless it's a missile launcher or something. And the third one is you've got surprise attack with a hollow projector, meaning if something's not in a core, they've got a very poor matchup against you.
Yeah, it's so weird that they're just paying one swick for a machine gun at that price point. There are not many units that are allowed to do that. But somehow he grabbed into the bargain bin.
Yeah, it's really relevant that you bring up that it's only one swick. And you do see a few elements that are under-costed swick-wise. And that plays into what I was saying before about how Military Orders isn't a faction pressured by a swick, like Corregidor might be, for example. So the Knight of the Holy Sepulchre, his hollow echoes, they're useful offensively and defensively. Warlore on YouTube, he just did a really good video breaking down a lot of the uses for hollow projectors, but they can set off mines.
Yeah.
You can use them to walk through repeater nets. You can stand up the hollow echoes on, you know, air quotes, ARO, where your opponent kind of has to spend the orders to respect that it could be him. So it's almost like having a helmet where there's nothing underneath the camo marker.
Yeah. And
your opponent has to be careful.
And even especially with his footprint, that you can sit around the corner, put him in suppressive fire, then the state's face, you get your hollow, and you can actually shove him around the corner.
Yeah, that's such a good maneuver. And it is important to mention that as long as no models are looking at you during the state's phase, you get to re-enter hollow echo for free. Even being able to re-enter the hollow echo with a whole order to get that surprise attack back can also be really useful. I came across Atlanta, who's, you know, infamous as a problem model, and essentially using surprise attack, you know, cloaking, shooting with surprise attack, cloaking, shooting with surprise attack. I was able to eventually get her with the weight of dice by tipping that engagement more in my favor.
Yeah, that's great.
And that's actually something unique with the Knight of the Holy Sepulchre. We'll be talking about the Tikbalang a bit later, who is a MIM-3, but sometimes when things have MSV, that surprise attack can still apply.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the it's getting a mimetism that you cannot break. Yeah. Mm.
Now, there's one thing I want to address with the Knight of the Holy Sepulchre, HMG, which is the accusation it can get that it's the tick we have at home. So when you look at the Tikbalang, and I think we might put that as our next model, the Tikbalang, so it makes a bit of sense. People can look at the Holy Sepulchre and say, it's great, but I'd rather just pay 10 points for the tick. It's got NCO, great, I've got TAC Aware.
Mm-hmm.
It's got Surprise Attack, I've got Mimetism, I've got the better BS. That sort of thing. But what's important to remember about the Holy Sepulchre is that it being a heavy infantry and not a tag is really relevant. If you want to take a tag in a list, you can't just take a tag. You need to take tag support.
Yeah.
You need to take an engineer or a tech B.
Yeah.
You need to be worrying about hacking protection. But the Knight of the Holy Sepulchre, you get to take him without that extra 30 points worth of models that would be needed to support a tag. And that's something that's really important to remember.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a hidden cost.
It is. Yeah. It's a hidden, call now and pay an extra 30 points for tag support.
Yeah.
All right. So I think, we'll move straight on to the Tick Belang. I think it just makes sense to move on to the Tick Belang now. We can continue this conversation after running through the Tick. It's move 6-4 is its first thing. Now, one thing I've neglected to mention during the unit profiles is the movement. And that's because aside from the Teutonic Knights, everything's moving 4-4. And that is cited as a weakness of the faction. We're seeing Torchlight Brigade sort of roll out now.
Mm-hmm.
And more players are realizing the value of 6-2 movement. Because until you see it in action on the table, it can be kind of hard to comprehend how much of a difference 6-2 movement can make. Anyway, the Tick Belang is 6-4, which is fantastic movement. It's CC-17, which isn't nothing. It's BS-15, Fizz-15, Whip-12, ARM-6, BTS-6, Structure-3 with Silhouette-6. It's got ECM Guided -6, BS Attack +1 damage, Climbing +, which is a really big deal, Courage, Dodge, Fizz 11, Gizmo Kit, Fizz 13, which we talked about before. That's higher than most tags.
Mm-hmm.
Shock Immune. It's got Mimetism -3, which paired with BS 15 just puts so many engagements in your favor. It's not even funny. Remote Presence, which is really, really valuable. It's got Religious as well. It's decked out with an AP Heavy Machine Gun, a Heavy Flamethrower, a DACC weapon, and it comes in at 1.5 SWIC and 68 points. The Tick Belang is easily one of the defining the Tick Belang of Montessa, I should say.
Yeah.
Is easily one of the defining pieces of military orders. While other factions have the Tick Belang of Montessa is unique in having AP rounds.
Yeah.
Now, the role this would fill is as a light tag. So you're seeing that smaller silhouette, which plays in its favor. The downgrade from 7-6, decreasing that base size, is a huge deal. And Climbing Plus on this tag is, it's unbelievable. There's so many applications.
Yeah.
And with the changes to how climbing works that happened about a year ago, from the head of the model, you can realistically spend 2 inches, which is just getting your base on a lot of buildings because of how tall he is.
Yeah.
So this lets you do a few things. The first one is it lets you find really weird angles to shoot things from and lets you climb up terrain to get plunging fire on things like a squishy fire team. Anywhere you see, the Tick can probably get to.
Yeah.
The other thing that's really important with the Tick having Climbing Plus is it makes it really good to put on ARO. The way you do this is you set him up on a building where he's in cover from things on the same level as him, but he's touching the back of the building so that if he gets shot and takes a wound, he gutses by climbing plussing on the back of that building. So a big issue with tags is they can't go prone, which means if you put your tag on, you have to either limit where your tag is putting arrows down on, because they need to be able to go kind of shrink back behind a building.
Yeah.
Or you put them too far out in the open, they take a bad fight or get a bad hit, they're on one wound, and you can't do anything to put them in a recoverable position. But if the Tick gets hit and takes a wound, you can flip him on the back of a building and cut off that lane of fire unless they come into your deployment zone.
Yeah.
Being able to go on the side of buildings like that also opens up fire lanes in really interesting ways. But the big takeaway is that the Tick Belang, for only 68 points, which is below rate, is BS-15 with Mim -3, AP HMG +1 damage, Climbing Plus, move 6-4. It's an apex gunfighter.
Yeah, it's many sing the praises of the Tick Belang. And yeah, the climbing plus, I've been in so many matchups that attack suddenly just getting some up somewhere, and where you thought your prone units would be safe on the rooftop, all of a sudden the Tick Blanc sees and is able to shoot them dead.
I mean, Infinity is a game where, you know, the tables are very important. Yeah. And a lot of people take pride in making tables that are very fair and balanced. But when you introduce something like a Tick Blanc, it can make the tables really unfair for your opponent, because you can just do things that they can't. The other thing about the Tick Blanc is that, you know, where we were saying before, oh, the Black Friar HRL is kind of necessary to counteract heavy MIM. If you're shooting at a MIM minus 6 model, you're shooting on 9s if you're in a good range, and they're shooting back at whatever their minus 3 is. Mm-hmm. So he can actually crush down heavy MIM models just by weight of dice as well.
Because ballistic skill 15, you still have a decent chance even after the minuses.
Even after the reduction. Yeah. And you know, sure, you might lose a face-to-face or two, but you've got 3 wounds and high armor enough to where you can shirk those off hits you take.
Yeah, you do. It's similar to how
It's similar to how when the Stigmaton was coming out, people weren't really sure how the HRL plus 1 burst was going to function. Was the weapon going to be good enough? And the answer was yes, because it has those 3 wounds and high armor.
Yeah.
Because it can handle a fail case. And in such a lethal game like Infinity, having such a reliable fail case is incredibly valuable.
For sure, yeah.
And the last thing is, it's got the crab bot inside. It has a specialist Whip 11 pilot inside. Now, while this pilot isn't the ideal thing to be pressing buttons with, on such a fast tag, I've pressed a hell of a lot of buttons with that crab bot, I'll tell you what.
If you're there anyway, and it takes a lot more orders to get a specialist over there, well, you can throw your life away on a whip 11.
Yeah, and you know, look, at the end of the day, it's a 50-50 chance, basically.
Yeah.
A bit more than 50-50.
Yeah.
If you've got 2 or 3 orders to spend on that, you're more likely than not to press that button.
Yeah.
Hark on Whip 12 all you want, it's only 5% less than Whip 13.
Hmm.
And while in the hacking game, that's a lot more relevant, when things aren't face-to-face, that's totally fine.
Yeah.
A very common thing you could do in acquisition is, say, shoot ARO pieces, run with Tick Blanc to one of the consoles on the flanks, press the button, back in the bot, go on suppressive. That's great.
Yeah.
So when you're looking at the Tick Blanc and then looking at the Knight of the Holy Sepulchre, it does make sense why that conversation can sometimes come out of, oh, why would you take the Knight of the Holy Sepulchre? The thing is, you do need that tag support. So that's very important to remember.
Mm.
So let's move on to another defining unit of the faction. And this is the Knight of Montesses. So these guys are knights on bikes. They're move 8-6, CC-23, BS-13, Fizz-13, Whip-13, Arm-4, BTS-6. They've got Dodge plus 1 inch, Impetuous, Martial Arts 2, Mimetism, and Religious. So there's a few important things to remember here. The first one is that even though it says it's Impetuous, because it's a bike, you can choose to have it not be Impetuous at the start of the game. And that's usually what I'd recommend players do, especially if they're not taking it in a duo.
Mm-hmm.
So going down the list, we've got a boarding shotgun pistol, DACC weapon, 27 points. A multi-rifle chain cult pistol, DACC weapon, 29 points. A boarding shotgun pistol paramedic, 29 points. And a Red Fury chain cult at 1.5 SWIC and 32 points. Now, the one you're going to see the most is the boarding shotgun paramedic. In an army where you have very few cheap orders, having a move 8-6 specialist is so valuable to your game plan.
Yeah.
And you can go incredibly far with it and really steal games. The other thing is that it as a paramedic is head and shoulders above a lot of other paramedics in the game. You'll usually see paramedics like the one I might run in a Crozier Link team, where my Teuton has died halfway up the board. I'm not going to run that paramedic up there to pick him up. I'm probably not going to take those long shots either, because it's so unlikely. But the Knight of Montessa being so fast actually makes getting those models up very doable.
Mm-hmm.
There's a few other interesting things with the Knight of Montessa. It's a very good offensive piece just as a gunfighter. BS-13 Mimetism -3 is very good, and that's a holdover a lot of motorcycles have before the motorcycle impetuous changes. The Red Fury option, it's one you don't see very often. A lot of people are very down on the Red Fury, but because of its damage 13. But if you're looking at a Spitfire, that's only another 5% chance more likely to wound. That's not a lot.
No.
The other thing is, if you take the Red Fury, and you know, I think the Red Fury, I'd put it in the ugly category overall. The Red Fury is a very crude way to solve a HMG problem. Because you get as far up the board as you can just in your DZ, you drive 8 inches forward, and now by just sprinting at them, you've probably gotten yourself in your good range. And with that mimetism, they're probably still shooting on flats. So it's a crude way to solve the HMG problem,
yeah.
But it is a way. And you can duo these guys. So you could take a Knight of Montessa Red Fury with that paramedic. If something goes wrong with him, the other paramedic can heal him up. You can take that same idea with the Red Fury and apply it to the multi-rifle profile as well. While you might not be initially impressed by the multi-rifle's range bands, you can treat any weapon this model has as having an increased range of 8 inches, which would take a 16-inch multi-rifle up to 24 inches, right?
Yeah, so, I would actually prefer the multi-rifle over the Red Fury, because now I'm not a fan of the Red Fury, because I always think it lacks punch. Especially the things you want to fight.
I think the multi-rifle is the superior option. If that's something you want to do, if you're running a Montessa duo, run it with the multi-rifle and the boarding shotgun paramedic. Yeah. There are another one of your duo options. Another option I really like, if you're looking at that Red Fury and you're like, oh man, I really like the vibe of that, grab the Bulleteer Spitfire instead. It's got mimetism -6. It can duo with it. If you put marksmanship on it, there's not a lot that stands up against it. And you can run very heavy remote military orders lists. And we'll talk about the remotes a bit more in a second.
Yeah.
But running that duo with the Spitfire Bulleteer and the boarding shotgun paramedics, really good. Another thing you can do is when you run out and shoot down heads with the Bulleteer Spitfire, you can then use the Bulleteer Spitfire as your repeater as well. And bringing along that super fast Knight of Montessa to press buttons on the way, it's really efficient.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if there's many more praises I can sing about the Knight of Montessa. You just need to play him. One funny thing you can do is that if you're not scared of templates and need to hold an objective like B-Pong, is you can drive your motorcycle in front of or parallel to the objective and then go prone off of the bike and use the bike as a terrain element. if there's missile launchers around though, be careful, because that's not going to end well for you, because they can just shoot the bike. But that's another neat trick. We talked a bit about the Montessa slingshot earlier in the podcast as well, where you just use it as a duo for one or two orders worth of extra movement.
Yeah.
But the Knight of Montessa, it's a defining model in the faction. I take it in most of my lists. It's very good.
Yeah. Yeah, it's also one of your better gunfighters around, because it is per BS-13, but the mimetism brings it that it's probably, a better gunfighter
than other.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And it's, you know, it's kind of embarrassing when you look at the Hospitaller HMG, which is BS-14, but you'd much rather have the BS-13 with mimetism.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just, yeah, no, they're fantastic. They're
as
fantastic.
Long as you're not facing MSV, they're better at it.
Yeah, totally. And they're a model that is, if they manage to make it all the way to your opponent's DZ and the deep strike is the role you have for them in your list, mm-hmm. they're very happy to dismount.
Yeah.
They're very happy to dismount and go run up into a building. The boarding shotgun's brutal. You know, they could lay a template back on you. You don't care. And having those two wounds, it's valuable for multiple reasons. The first one is, yes, you can survive a template. But the second one is, knowing that you can survive a template allows you to take on a lot more situations. If you look at, say, a chain cult that's damage 13, it's got, you know, let's say against the average medium infantry, it's got a 50-50 chance to kill. You aren't going to take that 50-50 chance because you're only one wound. But when you're a Knight of Montessa, you're happy to take that chance. And a lot of the time, about half the time, you don't take the wound and you're still on two wounds.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
All right. So moving on to another good one, we've got the Pano remotes. The Pano suite of remotes, it's really good. Namely, the two arm bots. The first one's the Bulleteer, which is the mimetism -6, either a heavy shotgun or a Spitfire, which the Spitfire only costs one swick, which is another instance of underpaying for your weapons.
Yeah.
These guys are fantastic. They're repeaters, they're move 6-4, DS-12 with min -6, and a duo option as well. I'd probably take at least one Bulleteer in most of my lists. They're very efficient pieces. We've talked a lot about their applications already, so I won't dwell on them too much, but they're very good.
Mm-hmm.
The next one is the Peacemakers. So these guys are also move 6-4, BS-12, and they have a repeater. They don't have MIM-6, but they do have forward deployment plus 8 inches. There's two profiles. The first one is the heavy shotgun with an aux bot, which is that flamethrower bot from earlier. And the one after that is a Spitfire with the aux bot as well. I don't think you see Peacemakers as often as Bulleteers, especially after the points increase, but they're still very potent.
Yeah.
You can almost think of them, like fat Marans. If you've got Defersen and an Order Sergeant in a Corps or Harris together, anyone who comes up next to that Peacemaker, it's going to cop that hacking. And like we talked about how the aux bot is a living mine, you've kind of got a Moran thing going on.
Yeah, sometimes it's undervalued, especially if you get the first turn with the Peacemaker and you're already up the board, you can start flamering stuff very easily because you're so fast.
That's true. And if you're up against a newer player or you're on a table that hasn't let your opponent deploy safely, just putting those two templates down is brutal.
Yeah.
The thing is, as well, with the aux bot, is you come around with that heavy shotgun and the flamethrower, you as the Peacemaker can hit mode while your aux bot does the template.
Yeah.
So there is no good outcome.
Yeah.
For your opponent. So you can imagine the Peacemaker as a fat Moran that trades the specialist capabilities for the ability to alpha strike really efficiently.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
So moving to the next one, you've got the Clipper drone bot, which is the Pano missile bot. All the missile bots are the same, except the Nomads get a climbing +1. I'm not saying this is tournament viable if you're trying to go for number one, but Military Orders can run a pretty good guided list where you take the Peacemakers, you take Defersen in a Corps with a Sergeant Hacker and a Cheetah Tin Bot and some defensive elements, and you take the missile bot. And you can run that, and it's fun. It's quite fun.
Expect your knights getting missiles.
Yeah, exactly. And it goes back to what I was saying before about Military Orders probably being the second or third best hacking sectorial in Pan-Oceania. So Clipper drone bot, give it a shot. You know, the full blown hacking list, it's probably not what you want to do if you're going for tournament number one, but it's really fun. Next up is the Fugazi. It's a move 6/6 repeater on top of being a flash pulse with mim minus 3. And this is a pain point. You only get one of them. Yeah. Usually in most factions, you're taking both of your 7-point flash bots quite often. And Military Orders is really hurt by the fact you only have one.
Yeah, there are many other factions that also rely on heavy infantry units that have these kind of bots with AVA 3 and then you can fill up. But this AVA 1 really hurts.
Now the Svelheimer came in and just stole all our bots.
They get
AVA 3, we get AVA 1. But no, the Fugazi is very good. You will take it in all of your lists just because you need the orders. But they've got some good application. They're good defensive elements. That mimetism minus 3 in the flash pulse. We talked about how that's messed everyone up. Yeah. A move 6/6 repeater is pretty valuable in situations as well. It's great.
Yeah, they probably suspected that you probably can negate it with John Dark and just take your War Core and your Tech B and also have two other cheap orders.
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, one thing you can do is you can roll up to that table with your Tech B, your Total Reaction Bot, a Bulleteer Spitfire in a duo, and an Evo Hacker. And that's really potent as a package.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it actually segues perfectly because now we come to the Mule Bot. It's your AVA 2 8-point baggage bot where you have the 8-point just para-CC weapon repeater. And then for a 0.5 SWIC and 15 points, the Mule Bot Hacker. I think, you know, aside from the just the cheap order of the Mule Bot, I think this is a sectorial where you can build it to where the Evo Hacker is actually very viable. It's tough to put in a list just as a fairy duster because you're not getting the points value from the points you're paying. I don't think you're getting the SWIC value, even though you're not under SWIC pressure, but you're definitely not getting the slot value out of having to sacrifice an 8-point Evo bot for, an 8-point baggage bot for the Evo Hacker. And that is something you have to be aware of. There is an opportunity cost in taking the Evo Hacker because you miss out on having that second 8-point bot. But if you're taking at least one primary gunfighting combat remote, being the Bulleteer Spitfire, the TR bot, or if you want to be really wacky, the Peacemaker Spitfire, suddenly taking that Evo Hacker is very viable. And then after those models go down, you just say, oh, great, I'll put Fairy Dust on my heavy infantry, which is fantastic. A lot of times coming up against Combined Army, I'll have my remotes with marksmanship and then switch over to that Fairy Dust so DeFrozen can ice like an Umber Samaritan or something like that really safely. And yeah, I've had the Fairy Dust come in really clutch in my games. So building towards having that Evo Hacker be viable in your list, it's a good direction you can take the faction.
Yeah.
And one thing I haven't really said much about is that a strength of the faction is you do actually have a lot of build variety because of your options and because of your duos and things like that. So moving right along, we've got the Pathfinder Drone Bot. I don't really feel the need to say too much. It's fine, but it's including your good Pano remotes. And then the Sierra Drone Bot, who's your 360 HMG bot.
Mm-hmm.
So we talked before at only one SWIC as well. One SWIC keeps coming up. So we're talking before about how you really lack long-range gunfighters. But if you can put up the Sierra Drone Bot with an Evo Hacker, you're effectively BS-14. And that's something you can use in active as well.
Yeah.
So that's really valuable.
Yeah, that's something people tend to forget is that, it's Total Reaction. So people want those IRO pieces. But yeah, all of a sudden you go on the attack. It's
very potent. And even if you put the marksmanship on it for active turn, it flips to their turn. A marksmanship TO bot's a nightmare to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can have that restraint to keep your TR bot down if your opponent gets the first turn and you have that Evo Hacker, it can take a lot of pressure off of the rest of your list. when you're building military orders lists, you need to be making sure you have enough long-range guns. And if you can get a cheap, viable one, like a Sierra drone bot with the marksmanship, that can let you, that can give you more room in the rest of your list to do the cool stuff.
Yeah.
All right, moving right along, we've got Dart. Now, Dart's a piece that there's a lot of conversation around. Some people swear by her. Some people say she's absolute trash. And I think, as usual, things kind of fall in the middle. But let's run through her stat line. So Dart, she's BS 13, Fizz 13, Whip 13, 1 armor, 3 BTS, 1 wound. She's got an MSV1, which is fantastic. But then she's got Camouflage, Climbing Plus, Courage, 4 Deployment Plus 8, Mimetism Minus 3, No Wounding Capacitation, which is a huge deal, Shock Immune, Stealth, Surprise Attack, Terrain Total, which has been really valuable in certain ITS seasons. And she's got 2 loadouts that both cost 34 points. The first is the Submachine Gun, Viral Tac Bow, EM Grenades, Pistol Shock CC Weapon. This is the one I'm taking.
Mm-hmm.
The other one is the Submachine Gun, Tactical Bow, not Viral Tactical Bow, Shock Mines instead of the EM Grenades, Pistol and Shock CC Weapon.
Yeah.
So the role Dart plays is as an assassin. She has the forward deployment and the camo state and climbing plus. She's got MSV1 and the no wound incapacitation, but she doesn't have long range guns. You know, if you gave Dart a heavy rocket launcher, not a heavy rocket launcher, but a heavy machine gun, you'd see her in every list.
Yeah.
But because she's got those short range weapons, her role is an assassin. Being able to scalpel out pieces of your opponents is really important. And she scalpels out 2 very important pieces. The first one is things like hackers, usually very squishy, hidden somewhere in a building. And while you can use Trinitarians to kill, go in and assassinate hackers, Dart having climbing plus and no wound incapacitation means she can get there a lot easier and can survive more than one fight.
Yeah.
Or survive if things go wrong. MSV1 also means she can assassinate MIM or heavy MIM models that are on ARO. If she surprise attacks with that submachine gun, gets them out of cover, which is pretty easy to do when you're camouflaged, they tend to go down pretty easy. So you've got squishy targets like hackers. You've got assassinating pieces with high MSV. And the last one, and the reason I take the EM grenades, is she can brick tags.
Yeah.
If a tag fails an EM save from that grenade, where an EM save is double action AP against BTS, they get isolated and immobilized. What becomes even more brutal is that you can spec fire these fairly reliably on a Fizz. You've got Fizz 13.
Yeah.
+3 for range, -6 for spec fire.
You can hit those things, yeah.
Yeah, and a lot of times people can't really stop that.
No. Yeah.
I've bricked a lot of tags with Dart. And if you're looking at your list and you're like, I've only got about 35 points left, but I don't have any AP, take Dart. She'll brick the heavy infantry. She can brick the tags and then either just leave them how they are, go kill the engineer, or she can then just start spending a few orders just SMGing it in the back until it eventually dies. Dart's very good. The viral tac bow, also not to be slept on. If you can get behind a core fire team, I guess not a core because that has sixth sense, but if you can get behind a large group of soft models, you can very easily just pick them off one by one without anyone turning around with the viral tac bow. And that's an advantage you get over the shock mine profile as well.
Yeah.
The tac bow is viral, which is much more dependable than just the normal tac bow.
Yeah, 2 BTSs, it's, yeah. Especially against Ariana without a BTS, that's killing.
Oh, absolutely. Her shooting that into a bear,
yeah,
it's terrible. So there are some criticisms of Dart, though.
Yeah, I think the first one can get passed over because people say, well, yeah, she looks like a specialist profile, but she isn't.
Yeah, no, and I think you get a few criticisms. The first one is, oh, well, Dart exists in other factions, but she's never taken there. And I think that criticism, it's unfair. Dart fills a very important niche in military orders that MO doesn't otherwise have. She's more valuable in this faction than others. The next criticism I hear a lot of is, oh, the TACBO or the EM grenade, it's only burst one. And while that's true, usually you're in someone's back arc and surprise attacking them when you're using those tools. You might be burst one, but you'll be on a 16 and they'll be on a minus six if they're dodging.
Yeah.
Which, while it doesn't solve the issue of burst one, it does somewhat circumvent it. And the last one, which I sort of covered, is just take a Trinitarian. Which, yes, while they're good, because the Trinitarians do get further up the table, Dart having climbing plus and no wound incap is a huge deal. It can't be understated.
She's a bit tougher as you can, and a bit more maneuverable.
Mm. We've all had games where an attack run or a plan has just gone down the toilet because someone got a crit on you, or you just got unlucky with your roll and took a wound and died. Dart doesn't do that. And speaking of Trinitarians, we'll move on to them as the last model in the good category. So Trinitarians, they're another pretty defining model, and one that I think sort of confused the identity of military orders a bit, because these guys might be the best hidden deployment specialists in the game. Let's run through them. BTS-12, Fizz-10, Whip-13, one armor, one wound. Not inspiring so far. But you've got camouflage, hidden deployment, infiltration, mimetism minus six, religious stealth surprise attack. You've got a few profiles. The first one is a fairly budget one, and they're all forward observers except for the last one. It's submachine gun, decharges, flash pulse, shock mines for only 23 points. That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's a ridiculous rate. If these were in, I think, any factions you put these guys in, they'd be taken very highly. At 23 points, I mean, at 23 points, it's just so little points for what you're getting.
Yeah. I have, if you go over with Ariadna, there are specialists around dead points wise, but they get a minus six hidden deployment up on them. Probably a better ballistic skill as well. They're just so,
yeah, BS-12.
Yeah, it's something. And yeah, there's probably also the reason why you cannot find them in vanilla and only in military orders.
Yeah, absolutely. So it being 23 points, and just by the virtue of being in the faction, it lets you take 14 model lists more easily, because, you know, at high levels of play, you can bluff having a Trinitarian, which can keep your opponent worried about facing their models correctly in case one appears later, can make them watch objectives they wouldn't otherwise be watching, and really put more mental fatigue on your opponent. So the first one's the submachine gun, decharges flash pulse. Another really cute trick with these guys is, because they're hidden deployment, there's a lot of times I've had opponents' models try to re-enter camouflage or go suppressive when they think that no one's watching. Then boom, you reveal the Trinitarian, you hit them with a flash pulse. And even if the flash pulse doesn't hit, that attempt has been canceled by virtue of you revealing. And that's usually the last order of your opponent's turn. So you can do really good stuff with that. So the Trinitarian submachine gun decharges, flash pulse, that's the 23.1. The decharges are really good for classifieds and missions. Right now in Victoria, we've got some tournaments coming up with Mindwipe and Frostbite, where those decharges are really valuable. They're also CC-18. So, you know, when it comes to that coin flip of the CC roll, if your opponent's not a CC specialist, or has maybe just got martial arts level one, you've got a good chance of slapping the back with a D charge. And that's a fail case most mortals can't handle.
No.
So the next one at 27 points is the same as above, but has a boarding shotgun instead of an SMG. And if you've got the points for it, it's really worth the spend. Having a boarding shotgun gives you AP and a template. And while you can go hunting and assassinate with that SMG, the boarding shotgun's where it's at.
Yeah, the option to blast or shoot. I still think the shotgun is one of the more overpowered weapons, especially at close range in Infinity. Because the choices your opponent needs to make is always, I dodge. Yeah, well, you're still shooting with a plus six.
Absolutely. Or you just and their BS-12, that's really good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I play Corregidor. The Morans having BS-12 in Corregidor, it comes up a lot. It comes up a lot. It can't be understated. Whip 13 Flash Pulse, it's also great. The one issue is, you know, if you do go hunting with that boarding shotgun, yes, you can kill a few models, but eventually you'll probably hit a template and then you just go down.
Yeah.
But they're still fantastic. They're still fantastic specialists.
Yeah,
pretty the next one we have
with the Mammothism -6, people are just gonna pick the templates because that's an if you want to hit them.
Yeah. Mm. So the next one is the same as the boarding shotgun one. It costs 1 point more and one swick more. It costs you one SWC for a mind layer. This one's really interesting because you've got a few issues. The first one is you don't have access to many camo markers in the faction. It's really only Dart. So if you put down that mine on the center line, they know that you have a Trinitarian nearby.
Somewhere between in 8 inches range, there must be a Trinitarian, yeah.
But that mine is something your faction doesn't really have, and that makes it more valuable. And we're talking before that one swick. You've got great one swick and zero swick options. You're not going to be hurting for swick. So don't feel like the swick is holding you back. But the way you need to play this mine is you need to bluff this mine as Dart.
Yeah.
You need to only put it in places that Dart can deploy and can feasibly deploy. I've blown up so many models because they've seen where that mine is and gone, I'm not scared of Dart in ARO. I've had... You know, I've had Kitsune walk past what they thought was Dart and get blown up by the mine. It's brutal. You just lost a 45-ish point model to a shock mine.
Yeah.
So the Trinitarian mine layer, it's very good. Just make sure you place it as Dart could be placed. You can take a Trinitarian mine layer and Dart. That's very good. Yeah. You can take two Trinitarian mine layers and keep them guessing. It's quite good. The last one on here, it's a bit of an oddball, but don't discount it. It's 28 points, same cost as the mine layer, 1.5 swick for a multi-sniper rifle. Now, at a -6, BS-12 multi-sniper for only 28 points in hidden deployment, that's really, really good.
Yeah.
And something people don't expect.
No.
No, that's better than... Yeah, that's better than a Malignos. And people take the Malignos sniper every now and again.
Yeah, it's terribly cheap. And a unit that I would not forward deploy or infiltrate with because I can put it in my own deployment zone and just be a surprise ARO piece.
Of course, but then you get the table design elements
where
a lot of the times... Very high buildings will be outside of the deployment zone.
Yeah,
healthy AROs and things like that. That infiltration, if you can put yourself on a, you know, there's that CB cardboard stock. They've got that like really weird tall tower up on a lot of tables. If you can put the Trinitarian on there, and they don't like, it's a huge gear check and it's over.
Yeah,
and it's not like Armand where they know Armand's there. They walk some people out. You shoot one of them in the head. The rest are stranded in the open.
Mm-hmm.
And being in military orders where you don't have a lot of long-ranged weapons, people can look at your defensive deployment and go, oh, they don't really have much that's threatening me on ARO. it's just MO things, right? This is how the faction is, not expecting the Trinitarian sniper at all.
Yeah, yeah. My local sword brethren, he's like the Pano guy. He has everything Pano related. And when I played his military orders, he just screwed me over. Well, I moved one guy across what was his fire lane. He didn't react. Second guy goes, he didn't react as well. And I thought, well, that's a very safe lane. And then my link team starts moving. And then all of a sudden, he starts shooting while they're in the open. At the link leader, shoots the link leader. And then all those four other guys are just stranded there.
Yeah, yeah. It's, you know, it's an oddball piece when you look at it.
Yeah.
And it reminds me of the 6-2 movement, because you can't really quantify it until it's on the table.
Yeah.
If you're just getting into military orders, I'd really recommend giving it a go.
This ends part one of the episode. Next week, we will go into part two, where we talk about the ugly and the bad of military orders, and some tricks and tips on list building. Until then, see you soon.